Mental Health Monday Marathon. 24 hours tackling the stigma with Mick Coyle on Radio City Talk.
8:05, it's Radio City Talk. It's the Mental Health Monday Marathon on Radio City Talk. My name is Mick Coyle. Really great guests. And to get Shane Ritchie on the... I mean, we weren't expecting Shane Ritchie on the programme, were we?
No, I mean, we hoped, you know. Which, like, you always do, don't you? But, do you know what? I'm feeling quite...
Don't say anything. Don't say anything.
I think it was Shane Ritchie.
I think it might be the cup of coffee. I didn't get a chance to ask him because I didn't know whether or not it was an issue. Have you seen the Shane Ritchie car?
No.
Have you heard about the Shane Ritchie car?
No.
Now, my next guest actually lives in a similar part of the world to me, so he might have seen the Shane Ritchie car. Have you seen a car? It's like a Peugeot 306. It's just got Shane Ritchie's face all over it.
No, have you not seen it?
Right.
Right, okay.
Just explain why we're talking for 24 hours, Jake, while I find a picture of Shane Ritchie's car.
Basically, what we're trying to do is track down Shane Ritchie's car, and we've come up with an idea of a mental health programme as a disguise for finding Shane Ritchie's car, and it's worked so far because Shane Ritchie's come on the show, but so far we're dependent on Mick to find it on Twitter.
If you just Google search Shane Ritchie car, you can see the car. It's just a car which somebody's then done. You know when you see HGVs where they've put something fancy on the side of it? It's that, but so it's just Shane Ritchie's face.
Is it driven around?
Yeah, it was. There's a post office behind my house, and it was parked outside once. And I said to my wife, "Have you seen that Shane Ritchie car?" Wow. She went, "Is it outside?" And it's obviously quite a notorious thing. What is that? That's like an old Peugeot 105 or something like that.
I just like the idea of you saying to your wife, "You seen that Shane Ritchie car?" And she went, "Which one?"
I wasn't expecting to introduce my guest as somebody who may have seen the Shane Ritchie car, but Danny Sculthorpe is with us in the studio and on the show. Danny, thank you for your time. Former rugby league sensation. I can say that because I was a big Wigan follower in the noughties. And a man who's spoken really openly about his mental health in the past. Danny, you've said something to me in the past about suicide, which actually we've heard, when I think about it, at least 5 times said today about suicide being a selfish act or not, because you think at the moment and at that moment that actually it's the number one thing that will solve not just your problems, but also your family's problems as well. And we've had a mum on who's talked about, you know, postnatal depression and saying exactly the same thing. We've had young men, we've had older men saying the same thing as well. And that just seems that Jake himself has said it. It seems to really strike a chord, that idea that at the moment where people consider it, it's not a selfish act. So this idea that we have in society, oh, it's just being selfish, they don't think of anything else, it's not based on the reality.
No, it's a complete opposite. I think people who do take their own life by suicide are thinking of people that they, you know, they feel a burden to, or they're letting down, and it's probably the most unselfish thing that you can do.
Just tell us, and for people who don't know your story, you've written a book, we'll plug the book as well.
Yep.
It's all in there. Without giving away too many spoilers, injuries were a problem, physical injuries were a problem, and it was one injury in particular that really meant that your career was coming to an end.
Yeah, at the age of 30, an age where I should have been hitting my peak, I signed a 4-year deal at Bradford Bulls. And I was in my third week of pre-season, and in rugby league, pre-season is where you do all your hard work, your heavy lifting, you're getting strong and fit for the start of the year. And I was in my third week of pre-season, I was doing some squatting in the gym with a heavy weight, and I prolapsed a disc in my spine, which were trapping the sciatic nerve, which meant I needed surgery. I had surgery, but about 7-8 days later, I caught two massive MRSA infections in the bottom of my spine, osteomyelitis and septicemia, which are infections that can kill you. It didn't kill me, but it put me back in hospital. But this time I was in hospital for 3 months. I was put on the strongest painkillers you can be on. I was on morphine, fentanyl patches, ketamine, all the drugs that you get addicted to. And I was on them for so long, I got addicted to them. I was on them for nearly 8 months, and the withdrawal of coming off them was just as bad as the actual injury. But when I came out of hospital, you know, after I'd had further surgery, I'd had to have my spine fused because of this infection. You know, I had to have the bottom part of my spine took away and all metal cages, rods and screws put in. When I came out of hospital, probably for the next 5 months, I used to get out of my bed in the morning and sit on my couch. And then at night, I used to get off my couch and go to my bed. I couldn't even make it to the toilet. I couldn't do anything with my 2 young children. I couldn't help my wife cook or clean, kick the ball around with my son. And I got a phone call out of the blue off my agent to tell me that instead of Bradford paying me medical bills, putting me through physio, making sure even if I couldn't play rugby again, I had some sort of quality of life, Bradford decided to do none of that. What they decided to do was rip up my contract, which meant I lost my job and my career. But most of all, I lost my house. And I had two young kids and a wife that I couldn't support. And that's when the depression and the suicidal thoughts started. And I couldn't get the thought of suicide out of my mind. Every minute of every hour of every day was how I was going to kill myself. And I couldn't get it out of my mind. But I did what most men do when they start suffering from mental health issues. I kept it to myself. I didn't want to see it as a sign of weakness. I'm a 6'4", 17 stone rugby league prop forward. Now, Phil Vivas says I'm 18 stone, but I am 17. And I kept it hid for probably 10 weeks until I found myself in the middle of Wigan in my car with a box full of pills that had killed half of Liverpool and a bottle of gin. And I was going to take my own life. Now, for some reason, I didn't, whether it were my kids, my wife, my parents that came to me, I couldn't tell you. And I remember going home from the car park that day and putting the drink and the drugs away and just carried on doing what I'd been doing for months, ignoring my wife, snapping at my kids, being horrible to everyone, until my family noticed a big difference in me. A couple of days after the car park incident, they sat me down and they made me speak about how I was feeling, and that was my turning point, just getting things off my chest and talking. I mean, talking doesn't cost anything, but it saved my life. And you know, it was if it wasn't for my mum and dad and my brother and my wife calling me out on my depression, noticing them signs that had changed in me, you know, I wouldn't be here now. And you know, I'd have ruined my kids' life, I'd have ruined my parents' life. And they say every suicide affects between 6 and 60 people, but I know it'd have been a lot more than that, and I'd have ruined a lot of people's lives. And now I'm probably in the best place I've ever been. You know, I was lucky enough when I was playing for Wigan, I was captain England. And I'm in a better place now than I was back then. And it's unbelievable how when one door closes, another one opens. And now I've got this new career in mental health with State of Mind charity. You know, we go around speaking, and it's unbelievable how things turn out. And like I said, I'm in such a good place now. It's unbelievable.
Jake, when you talked about your own suicide attempt, you talked about your vulnerability, and it wasn't at the moment of an attempt. It was actually the moments afterwards. Danny, you hinted at it there. It wasn't, you know, you came home from the car park, and then it was after that there was a sense of vulnerability. I just wondered if that was something you'd picked up on.
Yeah, well, I explained earlier was how after my suicide attempt, and I had to then go back and face my family and face my parents and my girlfriend. And it was only then as well what you've said and the point that Mick made at the top of this is that it was only then I realised that impact that you're talking about how it was going to ruin their lives, how devastated they were, which when you look at it now from a kind of rational point of view and a healthy point of view, I go, of course it was going to have that effect on them. But when I was in that state of depression and that's such a low point and that irrational thinking, I genuinely believed it would be the best thing for them. Yeah. The best thing for them. And then as Mick just pointed out there, coming through that other side and then being like, what now? What now? That was probably the most vulnerable of being, not the suicide.
Well, and I wonder whether that's where your story, because Jake, if you were doing stand-up comedy, you could still think, what now? I might, you know, go back on stage if that's something you were capable of. For you, Danny, it was, what now? But also, the thing that you had always been able to rely on was a no-go now. Yeah. There had to be something new. There had to be a new life for Danny Schoolfoot.
Yeah, I was such ill. I was so ill as well at the time when we, you know, the operations and stuff like that. I couldn't really do anything. I couldn't do anything to change it. And when I came home from that car park, that was probably my toughest time because I had a plan. And then as soon as that plan had gone, I didn't know what I was going to do. But people who call people for taking their own life selfish and stuff like that, you know, it's, you can't really judge people until you've been there, because it's unbelievable. And now I'm in such a good place, and I try and think about the feelings that I was having then. I can't get there. It's really weird. I just can't get there, because I'm so happy at the minute.
It's fantastic news that you're in this much better place. When people stop you, I don't know if you're walking through Wigan Town Centre now, do people stop you and remind you of, I don't know, games that you played in, or do they stop you and talk about your mental health stories? Has your mental health story almost taken on a life of its own?
Yeah, it's more state of mind than my career. which I'm really happy about. I'm probably proud of what I've done after my career than what I did during it, because of the lives that we've saved. I know with Phil and Phil coming on shortly, they'll tell you about the amount of lives that we've saved over the last 5 years through the charity, and it's, you know, there's no better feeling in the world when you know you've changed someone's life.
Can I ask you about Terry Newton?
Yeah.
Who was a player who I watched when I was growing up, and a player who, when you thought, if you're ever picking a dream rugby league team and you just wanted that type of player, you would pick Terry Newton. Yeah. And Terry took his own life, and I think the sports rugby league reacted in a certain way. He was one of your mates as well. And I wondered whether or not Terry's death and the response to it informed the way you thought about yourself, or if there was an impact of his death by suicide that you then thought, oh, I'm going this way. This is the way that rugby league players go.
Possibly. Because as rugby league players, we're always taught never to show any emotion. And that was exactly what Terry did. You know, on a field, you always thought if you're injured, you don't show it. And that's what rugby players were doing in everyday life. They were taking that into everyday life. And that's when things, you know, turned ugly and tragedies were happening. And what players are realising now is that if you can talk about how you feel and admit you've got a problem, then it is more of a strength than it is a weakness, and you're more of a man, and if you do speak about it, than if you don't. And like I said, it probably, you know, Terry was my best friend, you know, was it but each other's weddings and stuff like that. But it was down to Malcolm Ernie and Phil Cooper, who, three guys from the NHS, two wrote letters into the paper. One of them seen these two letters and decided to form a meeting between the three, and they become our three co-founders of State of Mind, and that's when State of Mind was formed at the beginning of 2011, a couple of months after Terry's death, because they realised that, you know, rugby players need help. They didn't want any more tragedies to happen like what happened to Terry, and, you know, like I said, we've saved a lot of lives over the last 5 or 6 years.
And in doing so, rugby league set a precedent that maybe wasn't there in other sports. We're actually going to be hearing over the course of the next couple of hours about some other sports that are doing other things at a different level. But actually, this wasn't just something which was adopted by a few clubs or a few, you know, non-league outfits. This was something the sport as a whole said, we're going to put our name to this. And everybody came on board.
Yeah, definitely. We're classed as an exemplar to other sports to follow. And, you know, rugby league's probably classed as one of the most physical, toughest guys, you know, who play sport. And if rugby league players can speak about how they're feeling, then I think anyone can. And, you know, just listening to ex-players, myself, Phil, Jimmy, ex-referee Ian Smith, if they can tell people and tell their story on stage in front of hundreds of people, then, you know, it just shows that it shows a lot of courage that you can speak about how you're feeling, and it makes a difference.
What sort of age group do you speak to when you go in and you speak to these young maybe players who are looking to start out?
We've gone from year 7 in schools up to, you know, guys retiring, you know, 60, 65. There's no age group, you know, because the thing with mental health, it doesn't discriminate. It can get anyone, and, you know, that's what it does. And, you know, it doesn't matter if you're £5 an hour cleaner or you're on 200 grand a week footballer like Gary Speed, you know, it can affect anyone. It doesn't matter what you've got. I always wish that it was a lesson in school. Because I'd rather my kids have good mental health rather than 11 GCSEs. I really would. Because what good are GCSEs if you've got poor mental health?
I think most people would agree with that based on your story. Absolutely, Dan. We're going to get Phil Vevers and Dr. Phil Cooper. So it's Phil and Dr. Phil. I'll call Phil Vevers Dr. Phil. See if he catches on, see if he realises as well. It's fantastic work that you're doing at the moment. Are you okay to stick around and sort of continue to share your story as well? We'll get Phil Vevers on the programme in a few moments as well.
Tackling the Stigma. Mental Health Monday Marathon on Radio City Talk with Mick Coyle.
It's Radio City Talk. It's 24 minutes past 10. My name is Mick Coyle. I do hope you're well. We're talking with Danny Sculthorpe, and we're talking about mental health within the sport of rugby league and a fantastic state of mind work that has been going on. Danny's been telling us about the types of people that they've been speaking to. And Danny, you're already booked up for like next week, the week after that, with schools, colleges, kinds of different people.
Yeah. Big in construction at the minute, you know, alpha male type businesses where guys think they can't speak about how they're feeling. So it's going really good, you know. More people we speak to, the better.
What do they say when Danny Sculthorpe walks in?
Who's he? Yeah, we do a lot down in London and places like that, so rugby league's not well known, but, you know, as soon as they hear our stories and listen to us, they think we're great, so...
Have you ever heard of Phil Vivas?
Philu. Is it the Phil Vivas you split for Saints with a mullet and tash? Is that
all? Oh, here he is.
I'll tell you what.
Give up your day job as a comedian, Skullful.
The number of people who've come in, and we had the guys on talking about life in the armed forces, and one of the big misses that they had was that the so-called dressing room banter. And it was that thing that once you left the armed forces, you weren't with the lads all the time. You didn't have that constant ribbon of each other. And that was one of the key things that they missed. And straight away, just as you two even see each other as you walk in, and then he's like, wind him up, will you? Wind him up because he's lost a bit of weight. Tell him he looks like he's put a bit of weight on. And I thought it never stops. It never stops, does it?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. It's full on. We normally have a weigh-in on a Friday, but I had a weigh-in today. We're at the gym today, so I had a weigh-in, so I took a photo of the weight and threw it through to him. But if you'd like to say what you said...
I won't say it on and off.
Absolutely abused me because I've lost more weight than him.
But that's the thing when, you know, when players retire or they get injured, I think that's what they miss more than anything. They miss the crack. They don't miss the actual being on the field and playing. I think they miss the crack with their mates, you know. Usually have 30 best friends, and as soon as that's took away from you, it can have a massive impact on the way you're feeling. And it had a massive impact on me. I used to train every day with 30 best friends, and as soon as that got pulled away from me, it affected me massively.
I mean, in terms of, like, the sport, you're basically doing shuttle runs for 80 minutes, and you're having collisions with guys, like, the same as a car crash. So your body's on the line all the time. And I wonder, did you ever, as a rugby league player, think, oh, this is going to have a long-term impact on me? Or is the physical side of it something where you think, well, I'll deal with that. That'll be a problem later down the line. I don't need to worry about it now.
Yeah, you don't even think about that. You know, it's just part of the job. You're getting, you know, decent wage for doing it. So you don't worry about the physical stuff at all. Well, I certainly didn't. The more physical a game got, the better it were for me. I don't know what Phil think about that.
Well, I just think that, you know, from when you start playing the game, you're playing it because you love it anyway. So, you know, from the age of 7 was when I started playing. So, and I think you were as early as that as well when you started playing, Dan. So, you know, you start because you love the sport. That's how you start with it. And if you're lucky enough to further down the line, progress into the professional ranks and then get paid to do it, you know, it's a bonus, really.
Did you ever find yourself, though, when you were starting out, you might have had a physical injury niggle? And actually, in yourself, you go, well, I'm going to keep that quiet because actually I want to be in that starting side. I've just broken into the first team, so I don't want to give too much away. I don't want to appear to be weak.
But, yeah, that's what you're told to do. You know, I was told by my father from an early age that you can't show weakness. So, and I always say that's one thing that I never really follow now from my dad. You know, he told me a lot of things, and that was one thing that he was wrong about, that, you know, you can show that there's a weakness in you some stages and you can deal with it. But as a player, you know, you play with a lot of nickels all the time. You know, everyone plays with nickels. You know, every time a team goes out, there's someone that's carrying a knock that he's kept quiet to himself, or the physio said, okay, you're 90% okay to play, and away they go.
Because, of course, the worst thing would be that if a team knows you've got something wrong, you become a hit target.
Done that before as well.
That's how you had spies in all the camps trying to find out what those weaknesses are. The reason I touch on that, Danny, is because I think, is there something which can be done in regard to those messages about don't show weakness, that lets kids who want to get into the sport know, or in any sport know, that actually that's something which is relevant for a rugby league encounter, but actually is not relevant to when you're in a dressing room, when you sit down with the lads after the game? That idea of don't show any weakness is something for on the field and on the field only.
Yeah, it's that's what it should be, you know. You shouldn't show weakness on the field because you do get targeted and things get worse. And the problem is that players are taking that into everyday life, and that's exactly what Terry did. He was taking that into everyday life. He was a laugher and joker. He was the hardest player I've ever played with. He was an absolute animal. And he couldn't tell his wife that he was suffering from a mental health injury or mental fitness. He was struggling with his mental fitness because he saw it as a sign of weakness, as most men do, and it's a load of rubbish, to be honest. You know, if you, like I said, if you can speak about it, it is a strength, it's not a weakness.
All right, so we've got Danny Sculthorpe and Phil Vivas. In a few moments' time, we'll hear from Dr. Phil Cooper as well. He's one of the co-founders of the State of Mind organisation. Phil Vivas, let's go. Phil and Dr. Phil, that's the way we'll define the two. Just tell us about your own mental health as well, because people will think you're one of these strapping lads who came across, you know, from the far side of the world to set the world of rugby league on fire. You had good success in your career. And now people will think, oh, surely there's nothing wrong with Phil Vivas. He always seemed like a stand-up kind of bloke.
No, I was good as a player, you know. As a player, I had plenty of anxiety and stress, just like everyone in normal life has. You know, everyone has stresses and anxiety to cope with. Mine were more about performance, selection and injuries and about getting back on my stresses side of things. And as a player and moving on from being a player and getting into the coaching ranks was when my difficulties started with my mental health. I first started going back when I'd sort of finished at Wigan. My contract was up. Mr. Lennigan just told me, he says, you know, we're not renewing your contract, we're moving in a different direction. And it was probably the first time I've dipped my toe into depression. As I said, it's not the nicest feeling I've ever had in my life. But I got back into coaching, and further down the line where I went to Salford, and I soon became the head coach down there. And then there was it was well documented too that they were having some issues down there regarding whether they were going to be a team or whether they were going to go into administration. And the owner at the time had actually said that he needed to find a buyer for the club, and that if it wasn't, then it was going to go into administration. And the problem started in pre-season, really. They're sort of not getting paid on time, and players coming up to me with problems about, you know, not being able to pay their mortgages and going home and tell their wives, and me having the same issues as well when I was going home with my wife. But then Mr. Kukash came in and bought the club, gave me four games and sacked me. And then that's where I really did spiral out of control into depression.
Is that when rugby league is different to something like football? Because for a lot of rugby league players, the salary is a salary, which is not too completely different to what would be a normal salary. Whereas in football, there would be a big payoff with that one. And those fears or worries that you would have about paying your mortgage, maybe in a sport like football, wouldn't be there. But actually for rugby league, it's very, very real.
Well, yes and no. I had 2 years left on my contract, so I was paid out. So financially, I was okay for the next couple of years, but it wasn't about that. It was about me losing my identity as a person, me losing my identity as a father that was putting, you know, food on the table for my kids. And I just felt like that I'd let them down, and I felt like I'd let my missus down and my family down, that all of a sudden I was out of a job. So it was the identity thing with me that that really hit home hard. And obviously going through them depressing times and having suicidal thoughts from that, it just happened that as I was going through those, I also lost my nephew, who took his own life at the same time. So sort of to be going through my own issues and then to go through that, it was a pretty tough time.
Yeah, absolutely. Danny, were you aware of other people's experiences right across the game, be it coaches or players, that actually there were people out there who were experiencing similar things to you, but maybe those stories were being told behind closed doors?
No, I didn't know. I didn't really know anything about mental health before I had my troubles. Just a quick, and rugby league used to have a helpline for players who were struggling back when I was playing, and not one single player had ever contacted it. But since 2011, over 200 players have sought help through a clinic called Sporting Chance, which was set up for ex-players to seek help, set up by Tony Adams, the ex-England Arsenal captain, and over 200 players, and there's only about 900 in the country, so it's like the national average of 1 in 4, and just shows that the stigma's being broken down, the barriers are being broken down regarding mental health, and players are realising that, you know, they can admit they're struggling, because we just wish that rugby league players and men and people in general in every walk of life would just treat mental health the same as physical health, because if you break your leg, you're going to get it fixed, aren't you? So why can't you get it fixed if it's your mental health? Why can't you? Why do you have to wait months and months and months before you wait to get to a certain point, or tragedy's happening before you actually do ask for help and admit you're struggling? You know, you should just get help straight away.
Because I guess a rugby league club, a Wigan, a St Helens, Widnes, they would protect their asset, wouldn't they, from a physical point of view? Because they think, we've got this guy on a contract. If he breaks his leg, we need to get him back playing again as quickly as possible as well. But it's interesting that if you start considering their mental health, you think about that in the same way. Are we going to get the best out of this guy if he's not thinking along the right lines, if he's struggling with matters, if off the field he's got issues that's going to affect him on the field? If you thought about it from, you know, a cold, hard cash point of view, you think you want to get the best out of these boys. You want to protect these assets as much as possible.
So that's something you do as a coach. You know, you tend to work out how each of the individual players operates, and also how they think, and that's how you manage them. And you can tell that there's a problem with a lot of them at times, and that's when you do call them into your office and you ask those questions, those serious questions. But like you said, you know, if you're an owner of a club, then obviously the asset is what it's all about. You know, obviously winning games is, but you can't win a game without a player. So you really do need to look after them. So that's now, because with everything that's gone on, all the clubs now have to have a welfare officer, and that welfare officer is there for the players to ask the questions, to let them talk to them, and then they can signpost a few things and point them in the right direction.
Are those welfare officers well-known figures now within clubs? They don't have to be famous figures, but are they sort of well signposted within the club that actually that's almost part of a backroom staff?
Yeah. Probably the welfare guys in rugby clubs are the most busiest.
Just in the top of the Super League at the moment. They haven't worked their way down into the Championship and that, but at the moment it's just in the Super League top division.
And the governing body has a head of welfare, a lady called Emma Roswan, who was brilliant for me. But clubs have chaplains as well. You can speak to most Super League clubs have chaplains, and you know if you speak to a chaplain that it's going to be confidential, and you can just make a massive difference, just getting things off your chest. You know, usually if you have a problem off the field, it usually follows you onto the field, and that's when your performance drops, and that's when you can lose your contracts and stuff like that.
Did you ever have any follow-up with Bradford Bulls? Did you ever have a conversation, letter from a chairman or a chief exec or anything like that?
After
your story emerged and everything that you'd gone through, and the fact that letter through your agent?
Yeah, we had contact later. It's only because I sued him. So my solicitor contacted him quite a number of times, and I won my case. You know, I got a decent payout, but, you know, they could have ended my life before I got that payout. It took me 5 years to win my case, but the most important thing with that case is that they admitted guilt at the end, which is all I wanted. It didn't matter about the money. It was just, you know, admitted that they were wrong in what they did.
We've got Danny Sculthorpe and Phil Vivas with us, two former rugby pros. Coming up next, we've got the co-founder of the State of Mind organisation, do fantastic work both in rugby league but also something which is being copied in other sports as well. Dr. Phil Cooper joins us in a few moments' time, and we continue the conversation here on the Mental Health Monday Marathon on Radio City Talk.
Mental Health Monday Marathon with Mick Coyle on Radio City Talk.
20 to 9, it's Radio City Talk. It's the Mental Health Monday Marathon. My name's Mick. We've got Jake Mill still in the studio, and also a couple of rugby league legends as well, in Danny Sculthorpe and Phil Vivas. Join us in the studio now to talk about the State of Mind organisation and the work that's done through that. It's co-founder Dr. Phil Cooper. Dr. Phil, thank you for your time. Great to see you.
Good to be here. Doing a great show today. I've been listening to loads today. Sounds fantastic work.
Brilliant. Thanks for your kind words. Danny was nice about you as well a little bit earlier on, talking about the work that you did. And you wrote a letter to a newspaper, was it?
Yeah. So I suppose weirdly, I work in mental health and drug and alcohol misuse in my day job, and a massive rugby league fan, big sports fan. And on a Monday, a bit like today, just read an article from somebody about the death of Terry Newton that we'd mentioned earlier on, saying how the NHS should get together with the sport to try and prevent it happening again. So from that, there was also a letter in the same rugby league paper that particular day, basically saying the same thing. So spoke to my boss at work and said, was it okay if we set up a meeting and see what come from this, really? So I ended up having a meeting in a community mental health team in Knowsley near Whiston Hospital. And then from just us organising a potential conference, we invited Brian Carney, who's a Sky Sports presenter, former Wigan Rugby League player, played with Terry. So we impudently asked the Rugby Football League if they'd give us a round of fixtures that we could theme around State of Mind. And they said, yeah, if... And we offered them a free mental health or mental fitness session for all the top players. So what we tried to do is, he said, OK, then, we'll let you do that. But we had to go and see they wanted to see the content of the session. So I found myself driving up to Hull Kingston Rovers with Brian Carney, and presenting to all the chief execs of all the Super League clubs who fortunately agreed to let us do this. And it was such a massive thing, really, because it allowed us to get to the players. You touched on it with Danny before about did he ever talk about any issues then? Well, once we actually did the first sessions in the clubs, players were quite quiet and a bit stunned and stuff when we were doing the session. But at the end of those sessions, players were coming up to us after every session at every club saying, I could tick off all those symptoms of anxiety or low mood, or, you know, I know a few players who've really, really struggled. So for me, it was a fantastic boost for state of mind, certainly. So when we had that first round of fixtures, all the players knew what was happening. They knew why they were wearing state of mind T-shirts. And for us, or certainly perhaps more selfishly for myself, I got a signing in sheet with all the autographs of all the top players that I've been watching every weekend. But that was a great thing for us. It was a massive boost, and Sky Sports supported us. They featured what we were doing. And for someone like myself working in the NHS, it's really, really difficult to get to groups of blokes, or lots of groups of blokes, but there's lots of those knocking around rugby league clubs and football clubs or any sports club. So blokes don't tend to come to my sort of services. However, they will come to Haydock Rugby League or any sort of sports club of an evening, because they'll either be training or playing. So you can get those messages. And the great advantage for us was using the likes of Phil and Danny, because their stories resonate when you've got a... How many stone was it, Danny? 17 stone, that's right.
18. It's going to go at 18.
If we carry on for 24 hours, that number's going up and up. It did start at 15, I think.
Possibly so, but when you get someone who's physically strong and that presence is strong talking about the issues that Danny mentioned earlier on when you were speaking, then that has a massive impact on an audience of young blokes who play rugby league, who've seen him play rugby league. So that encourages other people to be open. And for me, that's, you know, a massive sort of testament to these guys and the stories and standing up. But, you know, it's just getting to people where they, you know, where they're going to be. Blokes will be there.
Did you presume that the scale of the issue that you would deal with was already there? Or did you think, well, we'll do this because of Terry Newton's death and hopefully, you know, we'll find that actually that was a one-off for a different reasons and he had his own reasons and, you know, there's not a, you know, an endemic problem within the sport. As those people started to come forward, did you feel absolutely justified in making those first contacts and thinking there's absolutely an issue here and there's absolutely something that can be done about it?
Yeah, very much so. I think it didn't surprise me at all. Again, rugby league players are just human beings like all of us. So for me, my assumption was that people will struggle wherever they are. You know, you've probably touched on it a few times today. It doesn't matter what your background is. It just doesn't discriminate, so to speak. So from that perspective, we just knew that there might be an issue. But then again, I think with the rugby league support, and they were fantastic with us, play welfare officers, mental health first aid training for those play welfare officers, and also welfare officers at community clubs as well. So it's sort of come down for us initially approaching the players and thinking that would be the best way forward to get some publicity, I guess. So we always had in mind that it'd be the players, but then the fans, but then the communities around. And for us, it sort of snowballed ridiculously into different sports, schools, universities, everywhere.
Tell me about what was the first sport that then came to you and gone, this state of mind thing you're doing, is it transferable?
Yeah, I mean, we spoke to a number of different sports, because there were lots of sports. Yeah, I think, I don't know if James Wade's been on it at some point. But
he's on at 8:30 tomorrow morning. Not that I know the schedule off the top of my head, but he's on at 8:30 tomorrow morning.
I thought it was in terms of blur, but, you know, he was supportive. A lot of players from different sports like Roy Keane, Paul Merson were keen to sort of give us supportive quotes. So, obviously, rugby union's a very, very similar crossover. The sport's the same. The collisions are the same. The mentality's the same as well in terms of that macho sort of perspective. So rugby union, we've done lots of sessions in rugby union clubs. Been down to football clubs, West Ham United, Arsenal, Manchester United recently as well. Again, cricket clubs. And when we had colleagues in Ireland who asked us, you know, to support them to set stuff up over there, Dr. Martin Lawler, what we found ourselves was in a Gaelic football club in just outside Belfast. Yeah. You know, but again, completely transferable because they were playing like a really tough macho sport that no one really spoke about. So, you know, we've been all across Ireland and stuff, and it's been adopted in Australia in the National Rugby League over there. And I don't know, it just applies to anywhere. It's just a mental health session, but using sport as either disguise or getting people to be mentally fit. Doesn't matter whether you play sport or you're 12. Danny talked about, you know, training kids to get mentally fit, and us going into schools is part of that process. If you can get people to be as mentally fit as possible, then hopefully they won't have as many sort of hiccups, or they can ride out some of those ups and downs.
What was the reaction in Premier League football clubs? Was it with these guys going in as rugby league players?
Yeah.
You went in, going, which Premier League clubs did you go into, Dan?
West Ham, Arsenal.
United.
Yeah, I didn't go to United, but, you know, West Ham, it was with the under-19s. And, you know, the cars on the car park that they had, it was absolutely ridiculous. So money wasn't an issue, but, you know, a lot of them are... There's a lot of foreign kids who've come over from other countries, and that can have massive impacts on it. And they absolutely loved our session, didn't they?
Mm-hmm. Well, how do you break through that? And, you know, we talk about the fact money's not an issue when it comes to mental health, but money and attitudes can you know, be like, well, who are you? Have you seen my car? Look at me. I'm all right. I'm doing okay for myself so far. How do you break through that? Just show them some YouTube clips of your tackles.
it doesn't matter what you've got, you know. I think if you've not got your mental health, then you've got nothing. I think you need to be mentally fit before you can do any job to the best of your ability. And end of the day, we all like to perform at our best, you know, day in, day out. And especially, you know, I like to train hard. I still train now, and I like to train hard and perform whatever I do, whether I do a talk at a school or a university or a commercial one. I want to absolutely nail it, and that's what I'm all about. You know, just doing everything to the best I can.
The interesting thing about the footballers, I think, was A, they got, because they knew where he was coming from. A lot of elite athletes will have the same sort of mentality, if you will. They want to, just as you were saying, then you want to smash it every time. And so they sort of really sort of bought into the sort of stories, because he played at the top of the game and had rough times at the top of the game and stuff, and had injuries. So they get all that, because that's going to happen to them. When we were at West Ham with their academy, we had a load of 14, 15-year-olds, because the school was part of the actual academy. And we knew the coaches were saying that they're going to have to let a load of those kids go and break that news to them, and the pressures from parents, because sometimes parents are banking on those kids to make that money as well, which is a massive pressure. So,
Phil, do you watch other sports differently now? We always, you know, you see footballers having a bad game. You know, you can count a million tennis players who halfway through a match have just appeared to give up, and then the crowd get on their back. You know, you got a lad who looks like he should be, you know, scoring 25 goals a season in the Premier League, but he doesn't really look interested, doesn't run around. Do you look at different sports now? Cricket would be a good example as well, when you look at certain performances, or it might just be we're not very good, that actually something else might be going on.
You got one up on us.
Something
is that the last one?
You lost the Ashes.
It's good as your last game.
One day, no test. Yeah, go on.
Is that something that you bear in mind, that actually there might be something going on there?
Yeah, definitely. I do look at the different sports, and we generally have a conversation, and might watch a game on a weekend, and I'll just give Danny a ring and I'll say, did you watch that game? And he'll say, yeah. He said, what about this and what about that? And sort of just pick out different incidents or different players and just have an opinion of why they could be doing that, don't we?
Yeah, definitely.
You pick the paper up every day in different sports, and you're reading about different things about different sportsmen and issues that could really affect their mental health. And you just tend to look at things a whole lot differently now, you know. From sort of going through the troubles that I had, and then obviously doing a mental health first aid, and it just gives you some tools and to signpost a few things. And going around doing this offload program as well is massive, because all the people that drop in there, and they're all from different sports that play sports still, and you can pick up on different things as to why they're suffering as well. So the complete answer, yes, look at things differently.
Because I think we all watch, you know, the metatarsal injury. Oh, well, we know how long he's going to be out for there. Cruciate, he's out for that amount of time. Oh, he's got a groin strain there. Well, that's at least X amount of time as well. But actually, with those mental health side of things, there's a blank, isn't there?
Yeah, you can't see it.
I guess, in fact, you can't see it, but also then you don't know what a return time might be. We saw Aaron Lennon return very recently to Everton Football Club as well. And I think when the news about him emerged, people were thinking, well, what happens now? What happens now? And it's not like a broken leg. You think, well, in 12 months, he's going to be exactly the player that he was. He'll come back, maybe, and he'll come back a different player, maybe. He might come back as exactly the same player.
He'll probably come back better, because he's not taking them issues onto the field with him.
Yeah. He's in a happier mindset.
But I guess there's an unknown quantity, but that's the difference between physical health and mental health. Dr. Phil, what's next for state of mind? Is it about making sure that those generations, the new generations coming through, are always aware. Danny talked about the fact that he might speak to organisations with people who are heading into retirement. So does state of mind actually transcend now rugby league and actually focus on everybody? Because a lot of the stuff you've been talking about actually could feed into a million and one of the conversations we've had today about transitioning from armed forces life back into, you know, civvy street. We talked about that. Transitioning from not having any kids to suddenly either being pregnant or becoming a parent for the first time. That actually, that state of mind idea of these are some of the issues you might face, you might not face them. If you don't, great, but here's how you arm yourself with that knowledge. That seems like something which transcends even sport.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it doesn't just, it's definitely not confined to sport at all. Again, kids going to university, Liverpool's a big university city. There'll be lots of young kids who arrive here in September, October time who will struggle because they feel isolated. You've got big numbers of people who are socially isolated from an older generation. So, but you can use sport as a great hook. So we're doing work with Leeds Beckett University now and their new students coming through. We have a partnership with Woolston Rovers Rugby League Club, Community Club in Warrington for 2 years because they wanted to put that mental fitness for those young players coming through at the heart of what they do. So everything that we do, doesn't really matter whether sport's there, but if you improve your mental fitness, then you know that's just a good thing to do, just like improving your physical fitness. There's no real difference from my point of view. And you can influence people in so many different ways, and the hook of sport allows us to get, as again, for me, from an NHS point of view, I can get people to come to something or get help and support that I know they perhaps wouldn't have got otherwise. I can tell you an example from our very first year when we were at a rugby league game, just one of the games during the round, and a lady brought this young bloke up to us and said, I say young because I'm old, but I think, but he came up and she said, I don't know what state of mind is, but my friend here has just lost his son 2.5 weeks ago, and he's been talking about joining him on Facebook and Twitter. So I had a chat with him for about half an hour, I had my iPad, showed him where the stuff was for support locally, talked about, you know, support for people who've been bereaved by suicide. Because you've got Angela coming on late on tonight, I think. And so then he buzzed off. So here's me, watch the game. Usually in the NHS, you get to follow people up. So at the end of the game, just putting the marquee down. He came back on his own and said, thanks for talking to us before. He said, this was going to be my last game of rugby league. He said, I was going to take my own life tonight, but I'm not going to do that. And then buzzed off. So here's me thinking, flipping heck, I'd never have expected that to happen. And the great thing about this story is the fact that we were actually in the same ground the year after, and he came back. And we're getting emotional talking about this, but he came back up to me and gave me a massive hug and said, thanks for speaking to me last year. I've got help and support. And he introduced me to his other son, who was about to become a parent, so he was about to become a granddad. So just a magic thing that I'd never have expected to happen, but just by putting rugby league and mental health and fitness together, so anything can happen. That sort of thing's happened in schools.
But I was going to ask you about, you know, what sort of responses it had, data that suggests, you know, it's working. But actually, the best thing you can get is that the anecdotal evidence, mm-hmm. a human being who actually tells you that's happened. Either have you got sort of anecdotes about the successes, maybe experiences that people have had?
Yeah, I've got one in a school in St. Helens. We spoke to 1,100 kids in one day. And after the session, we'd done four sessions in one day, and after the school day had finished, a bell went, this young lad went home, said to his mum, I've been struggling recently, I've not had a clue what it has been feeling really down, I understand what it is now, I've just listened to State of Mind, listened to Danny Schoolthorpe, I think I'm suffering from depression. So himself and his mum went to the doctors, seeked help, and we went back to speak to the teachers about 4 months later on it, mm-hmm. and the week before we went back to see the teachers, this young lad's mum came in and said, I'd like to thank you for getting State of Mind in. I finally got my son back.
Wow.
It's amazing.
Mm. Fantastic.
Really powerful stuff. And with the offload programme as well, you know, we only just started it not so long back. It was just started last year. And one of our first clubs that we went into was Widnes. And I think from our first session, the first email that came back from one of the guys that was in there sent an email in to say, you know, thanks very much for starting this programme with us. I wanted to take my own life before I went in there. Now I've moved on from that. I can see a future ahead of me, and I've changed my mind on that thought. So thanks very much.
Absolutely. You know, absolutely. It's all really worthwhile. Powerful. Saving lives. Guys, thank you for your time. Really appreciate it. Dr. Philip, people want to find it. State of Mind is all over online. Yeah, it's State of Mind. Every single sport is on there. Social media too.
It is indeed, yeah. stateofmindsupport.org is the website, but just Google State of Mind, you'll find it. SOM Rugby League if you're on Twitter.
Dr. Phil Cooper, thank you for your time. Thank Danny, you. Thank you for your time too as
well.
Very welcome. Your book's out, by the way.
Yeah, Highs, Lows and Hypos. Yeah, a bit of highs and lows of life in my rugby league career and hypos because I'm a type 1 diabetic and it's doing really well. So thanks for plugging it.
Phil Vivas, have you got a book out?
Nah.
Laurel and Hardy. No.
Thank you for your time.
Cross us, Bible.
Thank you for your time. Great to get you all on the programme. All right, the Mental Health Monday marathon continues. In 1 minute's time, we will be halfway through.
Mental Health Monday Marathon. Tackling the stigma.